breaking through that flimsy door. All that on top of worrying about what the hell you've gotten yourself into out there. Please, don't do that to me. I barely know you from a lump of rock, but I can see the goodness in your eyes. We need you. Call me Mama, call me Mum, call me Grandma for all I care. But we need you. Newt almost shook with confusion. Confusion turning into an anger that made no sense. He closed his eyes and forced himself to breathe. This bloody virus, he thought. He'd never know how much was paranoia and how much was the true effect of the thing on his mind. But in that moment, he just wanted to scream and pound his chest like a damn gorilla.
Newt?
Keisha asked, looking up at him from the floor. You forget how to talk? A sudden calm washed over him, a calm he hadn't felt in a long time. The extremes were getting to him, but for the short term he'd take that peace and take it happily. He took the few steps to where Keisha sat and sunk to the floor, trying his hardest to fake a genteel smile.
You're right, he said. Walking around the bloody crank palace without a map and with the sun about to set sounds like something only a crazy person would do.
A brief moment of silence stretched out, the two of them looking at each other, waiting for the other to react. Then, as if a switch had been flipped, they burst into laughter, a rollicking giddiness that made no sense, which just increased the giggles exponentially. They laughed and they chortled, and they even threw in a few snorts. Newt couldn't remember the last time something had struck him as so funny as saying what he'd said. The layers and vicious cycles of irony weren't even worth thinking about. Crazy person. He was a crazy person, all right. She was a crazy person. And they'd just scratched the surface. The crazy person level would just keep going up and up, and they'd be there to laugh like crazy people as it did.
Who needs food anyway? He said through the hysterics. You can't feed crazy.
Right?
Keisha managed to respond. She was laughing so hard that Dante had fallen off her lap and lay sprawled across the floor, snoring like a little bear. This made both her and Newt's laughter reach something that could only be called guffaws. He had tears in his eyes and couldn't remember any of the horrors they'd experienced that day.
God help him. Going insane wasn't so bad after all.
Chapter 6. In the middle of the night, someone knocked at their door. Newt had spent an hour or so writing in his journal before falling asleep in a corner of the small cabin, his back pressed against the joint of the walls. Keisha and Dante had been snoring softly since the sun finally sank beneath the horizon. Their manner of deep breathing eerily similar to each other, despite their age gap. It had a soothing feel to it, like an oscillating fan, one of the many tiny memories that keep impeding on Newt's mind. Sleep had been welcome, those soft snores of his new friends turning into the soft break of ocean waves inside a dream, Newt standing on a beach. Nothing happened in that dream. Nothing but the ocean water and blue sky and heat of the sun. But then the knocks came, steady and strong, as unwelcome in the paradise of his dream as if an army of scorpion-like crabs had erupted from the sand and crawled all over his body. He opened his eyes to the darkness of the cabin, but it took a few seconds more for the dream to fade. The choppy surface of the water became the smooth, cheap plastic of the cabin floor, the blue sky, the faintly seen ceiling tiles, the sweet ocean air, the stale air of the cabin. The knocks came again, and Newt was all at once awake. He jumped to his feet, stared at the door as if he did it long enough he'd magically see through the wooden slab. Keisha stirred from her position on the opposite wall, rubbing her eyes, still asleep. Newt didn't want her to wake up. He couldn't explain why. Against every instinct that screamed at him from the human depths of his former rational, reasonable mind, he ran to the door and ripped it open, not bothering with a small crack to see who their intruder might be. Even more irrationally, before he could see who'd come inquiring, he stepped out of the cabin and closed the door behind him. The paramount goal of his life appeared to be letting Keisha and Dante sleep, a notion that made as little sense as his actions. He'd surprised the knocker at their door, a shadow of a person who'd taken several steps backward at his appearance. When the door clicked shut, a silence like the vacuum of outer space overtook the trees and open areas surrounding them. There was no wind, no insects, no rambunctious owls or other nocturnal creatures, no voices, nothing. Newt said the first thing that popped in his head, whispering with conspiratorial angst.
It was empty. We can leave if we need to. We don't want any trouble.
More silence. Newt was emerging from the grogginess of sleep, felt refreshed but mortally hungry. His stomach growled, the first sound since he'd spoken. Staring at the dark figure before him, he decided to wait it out, use patience as a weapon. A solid minute passed.
Is it true?
The stranger whispered, the harsh, gravelly voice of a man who seemed to have chunks of rock stuck in his throat. Newt didn't know what he'd expected. Maybe a raging crank who stabbed him as Newt heroically fought him off, even as he took his last breath to save the kid. But someone asking him if it's true was not on the list. He decided on a little more patience and didn't respond.
Well, is it?
The stranger was not one for proper introductions and the exchange of pleasantries.
Is what true?
Newt finally asked, rather needlessly, he thought.
Are you, you know, one of them?
The bloke desperately needed to clear his throat or get emergency surgery. A testy annoyance overwhelmed Newt's curiosity.
Can you please just ask me whatever it is you're wanting to ask me? Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
An apology was yet another thing Newt hadn't expected. The man was full of surprises.
It's just a rumor that's running wild all over the palace. I had to know. I have reasons. Are you one of the kids that Wicked has been testing? You want to talk about rumors? There are all kinds of rumors about that now.
Newt felt a chill. His entire hopes for safety in this place had depended on anonymity, staying quiet, off the beaten path. He also had no idea that the general public knew about the things Wicked had been doing to him and his friends. The gladers. The thought made him so overwhelmingly sad in that moment that he almost abandoned his visitor and went back inside.
It's okay if you don't want to talk about it,
the man said into the awkward moment of silence.
It's just that I had a nephew taken by those bastards almost 20 years ago. Never heard from him or about him ever again. I don't know what I was hoping for. I'm sorry.
The man's kindness and gentle ways brought Newt back from the abyss of his feelings. He wished he could see the stranger's face, but it was too dark.
No, it's okay. I'm just a little shocked, is all. For one thing, how on earth do people know that about me? We just got dumped here today.
I think the higher-ups leaked the information so that you'd have some protection. Most people here are in the early stages of the flare, so they're still smart enough to know not to mess with someone like you.
What? Why? And what was your nephew's name, by the way?
Even as the words came out of his mouth, he knew the answer wouldn't mean anything. They hadn't known each other's real names inside the maze.
Alejandro. Did you know him?
His voice broke on the last word, coming out as part of a hitched sob. The name rang a bell for Newt, even though it shouldn't have. He'd heard that name before.
Maybe.
He now found himself wishing and hoping for just one day with all of his memories, each and every one of those suckers, no matter how heart-wrenching it might be, before he was past the gone.
I think I knew him,
Newt answered quietly, unsure of what answer would help the most.
I'm sorry. They took my memories. But yes, I'm sure he was there.
The shadow before him collapsed to the ground, first to his knees and then bowing forward on his elbows, as if he were about to pray to Newt like a priest. He let out his sobs then, crying as hard and loud as a grown man possibly could. Newt looked around, sure that the sounds would wake Keisha and Dante, not to mention anyone within a half mile.
Listen, I can tell you what it was like. Maybe that'll help.
He couldn't think of anything that would possibly help less.
There's a good chance he's still alive, out there somewhere. Some of us escaped. I have friends who are trying to make good things happen.
The stranger looked up sharply at this. Newt saw the briefest hint of reflected light in the man's eyes. But he didn't, or couldn't, speak. He dropped to his elbows again, shaking with his cries. Newt didn't know if he'd ever had patience in his life, but he certainly didn't have any now, and sadly one thing weighed heavily in his mind.
Listen, he said. We can talk about it more, but do you have any food?
Chapter 7. Newt had never been so thankful for the arrival of a complete stranger in the middle of the night inquiring about his long-lost nephew.
Food. Glorious food.
The man's name had finally been revealed as Terry, the most unlikely name Newt could imagine, and it turned out he did have a reason for his rock-salted voice. As a young man, he'd had throat cancer and surgery to fix it, before the apocalypse. Newt and Keisha found this out and much more as they had their first neighborhood cookout in the Crank Palace. Dawn had crept in by the time Newt roused Keisha and her son, explained the situation, and then followed Terry to his shack of a home, which was identical to the hut they'd just left. But it was a little more lived in. Some worn-out old chairs, a few pictures of people nailed to the walls, the lingering smell of body odor. Luckily, they ate outside, in the cool air of morning, with Terry and his wife, Maria. She was quiet and fidgety and said stuff that didn't quite make sense. She liked the word purple, of all things. The poor woman was obviously farther along the flare track than her husband.
"We thought they'd given up on this place a few days ago," Terry said through a bite of grilled beef.
Their neighborhood cookout consisted of a campfire with pieces of meat placed on the ends of sticks and roasted over the flames. Beef and chicken, by the looks of it, although Newt never asked. He also didn't care. It tasted delicious. He was on his third piece and had no plans to stop anytime soon.
"What do you mean?"
Keisha asked as she broke off a chunk of blackened cow innards and fed it to Dante. Terry shrugged.
"You know, this whole getup was originally meant to be a civic service, back in the days when the higher-ups had time to worry about anything but saving their own hides. But once we got full, they stopped dropping people off. Word is they're just burning them in massive pits on the east side of the city. Maria says it's over there because the wind tends to come from the west. They don't want to smell burning bodies all day long in the city."
"They're purple,"
Maria said in response, her mouth full.
"They're all purple. Purple when they go in, purple when they come out."
Keisha's eyes widened.
"Damn, woman. What's your—"
She stopped before saying something she'd regret, as if she'd temporarily forgotten that this was what happened. People lost their minds.
"Sorry," she muttered under her breath.
"Purple,"
Maria said it wistfully, staring into the fire. She was a strong woman with calloused hands and leathery skin, her hair turning fast to gray. Terry actually looked just about the same, his hair just a little shorter, with a balding patch on the upper deck. If he hadn't introduced her as his wife, Newt might have thought them siblings.
"But then you came along," Terry continued, ignoring Keisha's comment. "We saw the truck, saw you get out, saw them acting like jerks, saw them drive off. That's when we ran into town to tell people, but somehow they already knew. Knew who you were, too. Strange times, getting stranger."
Newt thought about that, chewing his food like such a thing might never happen again.
"I don't know why they'd give a crap about me. I'm not immune like most of them. They just had me along for the ride, nothing but a bloody control subject. Once I caught the flare, my days of being important were long gone. Who knows? They probably just need to know how I end up so they can finish off some stupid report that no one will ever read."
He wondered about this town Terry mentioned and what such a place would be like. Keisha spoke up. "You guys seem pretty early in the game, like us. What about all the people further along, especially past the Gone? Where are they?" She shot a quick and sheepish glance at Maria.
"Things can get pretty brutal," Terry replied.
He looked at a piece of charred beef that he'd just been ready to plop in his mouth, lowered it with an expression of disgust. Newt didn't really want to know what knowledge or memory had brought on that transition.
"Some are around, and you gotta be careful. Some get taken care of. Some take care of themselves. And once a week or so, there's a group of people like us, not the higher-ups, who round up some of the worst ones and sneak them out of the palace. I don't know where they take them or what they do with them. Don't want to."
He tossed the uneaten beef back onto his plate. For a few seconds, he fought back tears.
"We live in hell,"
Keisha said quietly, barely heard over the crackling of the flames. Newt was tired. Terry had come a-knocking at their door at least a couple of hours before dawn, and it wasn't as if Newt had slept like a fat and fed baby until that point, what with the bare wooden floor and unfamiliar surroundings. He closed his eyes, wanted nothing more than to crawl closer to that fire, curl up, and sleep the day away. Mainly, the world of dreams seemed a better prospect at the moment than hearing more from Terry.
The look he'd given that meat.
The lost tone in his voice when he said a group of them rounded up cranks past the Gone and took them someplace. It was all so ominous. So depressing. His future.
"You look like you could use a nap," Keisha said.
Newt just nodded, mumbled something unintelligible on purpose. Maria screamed. Newt jolted awake, looked up at her. She'd jumped to her feet, eyes wide with terror, letting out hysterical shrieks as if someone had poured a family of spiders down the back of her shirt, waving her arms about like a gorilla on the rampage.
"Maria!"
Terry yelled. He crawled over to her, grabbed one of her flailing hands, tried to pull her back down to the ground, but she brushed him off, smacked him in the forehead.
"She was purple! Don't you get it?"
She stilled herself, stood rigid with fists at her side like a child demanding something from her parents, took each of them in with a glare.
"I didn't even have a chance to raise her. How could I? In this mucked-up world, how could I dare? Better purple than crazy. Better purple than eaten by some damned crank. Better purple than taken by wicked and thrown in a cage, like an animal."
The words had spilled out of her, one on top of the other, until they blended into a long slur of madness. She sucked in a breath now, then belted out one last roar, her face reddening and swelling up like a cooked grape.
Purple!
Maria dove into the fire, screaming now from pain more than rage. She slapped at the burning logs, the glowing hot coals, the ashes turned to gray but still smoldering with intense heat. Newt could see the burns melting her skin right before him, too frozen in shock to help. Her face grew taut, the pain evident, the indifference plainer. Terry tackled her with such force that both of them tumbled and rolled out of the fire and several feet away. Newt had to lurch to his left to avoid getting smacked by their bodies. When he looked over his shoulder, Terry swatted with open palms at any lingering flames that had sprung up on her clothes. Her hair, too, singed and sooty. It smelled terrible. Keisha held tightly to Dante, smothering his face into her chest, her own eyes squeezed shut as if not seeing would make it all go away. Terry had stopped pounding on his wife, now just cradled her body and stared down at her, breathing heavily. Tears streamed down his face, but he said nothing. Maria lay still, silent, somehow sobbing without noise. Newt's stomach had turned sour, his weariness gone. He didn't know how badly she'd been burned, but something told him there wasn't a Crank Palace hospital up the street, right next to the grocery store and bowling alley. Terry finally slouched to the side of Maria, crossed his legs pretzel style, shoulders slumped, forearms on his knees, hands dangling like ornaments. He gave Newt a look that said it all.
Don't ask.
Not that he needed to. The window onto Maria's life had cleared a bit, some of the grime washed away. The only thing left to wonder was which had come harder. The madness it took to kill your own child? Or the madness that resulted from killing your own child? And at what stage did the flare creep its way into the affair? Newt had no right to know, and swore to himself he'd never ask. Newt got to his feet and walked around the fire to where Keisha and Dante huddled together.
"You okay?" he asked lamely.
Keisha nodded but didn't say anything. Dante was quiet as a church mouse, a phrase that popped into Newt's head unbidden, a thing he'd heard 100 times in the past from someone he loved but couldn't remember. But it was coming back. An image was starting to form. An image of a woman who looked a lot like him.
"I have to go," he said.
This got Keisha's attention. She looked up at him.
"What? Go where?"
"I won't be long,"
was all he gave her in return. He expected her to argue, but she seemed to understand.
"We'll be okay."
Newt had already turned around, was already walking away. Chapter 8. He walked 10 minutes before he saw another soul, and the stroll calmed down his nerves. Seeing a lady with so much grief that she jumped into a hell-hot fire, swatted at burning logs and coals like flies on a picnic table, well, that was enough to make a person want to take a walk. The morning air had warmed a bit, the sun shining through the leaves of the trees to dapple the ground with dancing light. He took 3 deep breaths, in through the nose, out through the mouth. He felt better. And it hadn't taken long to get the lay of the land. The entire Crank Palace had been designed in a pattern of circles. Sections of rings bordered on both sides with circular roads or dirt paths. They grew smaller as he walked, gradually. He imagined an astronaut of old might compare it to seeing the Earth's horizon take on its curvature as you rose higher toward space in your rocket ship. And from way up there, Newt figured the palace must look like a giant game of darts, a bullseye in the middle. That bullseye was where he headed, and he heard a general clamor of noise coming from that direction. Another memory leaked out of his swiped mind. Watching a football game on the telly, hearing the roar of the crowd when a striker kicked a goal. It couldn't have been a thing happening in real time. It was a match recorded long ago by his... mum. Yes, his mum. He remembered watching it, clearly. And the sound of that crowd was what he heard now, increasing in volume with every step. The central hub of the palace must be a gathering spot of sorts. A large group of people definitely awaited him there, as if he were a gladiator about to step into the Colosseum of ancient times. His wiser half told him to turn around, to at least convince Terry or Keisha to go along with him. But that wasn't going to happen. Newt needed to know what he'd gotten himself into. Each diminishing ring of land that he passed grew more crowded with tiny cabins, shabby huts, and tents, although there were far fewer of those now, squeezed in amongst trees, the ground littered with trash. He had a sense that his captors had purposefully dropped them off in a spot still considered the outskirts of the Crank Palace, not fully developed yet, probably planned at one point but abandoned. Most of the structures had broken windows, the glass long missing by the looks of it. He could only assume that shards of glass were the chief weapon around these parts. He didn't see many people, just a few spotted here and there, mostly a quick glimpse of their backs as they disappeared into whatever shack they considered their home, closing the door behind them. He heard a lock engage every now and then, wondering what good they did in such shabbily built structures. More than a few sets of eyeballs peered out at him as he walked by, giving him the shivers. He chided himself for not grabbing his launcher before taking the walk. He could have kept it hidden inside the backpack. Right then he'd settle for the knife he also left behind and considered searching the area for a stray piece of glass. Before his next thought could collect itself, a man stood in front of him, seemingly appearing out of nowhere. He had a glazed look in his eyes, staring at Newt, but more like he stared through Newt into some otherworldly distance that made him happy. He had a look of... bliss. Bliss. Newt's own mind did something like hiccup inside his skull. The memories that continued to strain against the dam of the swipe bulged outward, for a moment mixing with his recent recollections. He knew what the bliss was. A drug given to the flare-infected that was supposed to stall the effects and symptoms of the brain-destroying disease. Looking at this man in front of him, swaying on his feet as if to some unheard tune, eyes glossed over, an expression of delirious glee on his face, Newt wondered. Maybe the drug just got you high so you could forget for a while. Who knew? Newt had stopped walking, but started again, stepping around the stranger.
"Don't you want some?" the man asked. "I heard they're going to stop giving it out soon. Better get it while you can."
Without any shame, with complete awareness that he was the kind of person for whom the drug had been intended, Newt said,
"Yeah, I want some. Got any?"
The man made a weird noise that might have been a chuckle.
"Now why in the hell would I have asked you that if I didn't have any?"
Another chuckle, snort, whatever that sound was that came out of his nose with a little spray of snot.
"How much you got to pay for it?"
"How much I got?" Newt sighed.
"I got nothing."
The man took an exaggerated step toward the side of the path, squared himself on his feet, then swept forward in a ridiculous grand bow, one hand crossed over his belly, the other rising up behind him. He spoke to the ground.
"Then I'm sorry to have disturbed you, my good man, as you were."
"As I was," Newt muttered. He walked toward the crowd noise that hovered in the air like smog. No one else bothered him, at least not directly. He certainly saw some things that bothered him. A naked woman clung upside down to the lowest branch of a tree, her arms and legs wrapped around the bark-scratchy wood above her. She made no noise, made no noticeable effort to let herself down, but followed Newt with her eyes as he hurried to scoot past her. There were enough bare-knuckled fights breaking out on the streets and between the huts to keep him entertained if he got bored. A man sat on one of the rings of streets, filthy beyond measure, his back rigid and straight as he sang a soft tune of gibberish. Nearby, two women stood facing each other, staring into one another's eyes, saying nothing, completely still. At their feet lay a man looking blissfully at the sky. Literally with the bliss, judging by the false glee in his eyes. These sights increased the farther he went, discouraging him with each step, until he finally came upon a wall maybe 12 feet high. Unlike the barrier that bordered the Crank Palace as a whole, this wall wasn't made up of wooden planks nailed together. This one was cement, or stucco, once painted but now a patchwork of crusty flakes of pastels. An archway stretched over an opening in the wall, which led to the crowd he'd been hearing on the other side, a swath of people milling about like giant, fired-up ants. At the top of the opening's arch, there was a sign with bright letters that seemed as out of place as a kindergarten, from which it very likely might have been stolen, would have been, in that nasty place. Central Zone. Newt paused, looking at the sign. Maybe he should go back. Hadn't he learned enough for one day? Wouldn't he feel safer with a weapon or a friend? Yes and yes. But he walked through the archway regardless, into a sea of frantic activity. The zone was wide and circular, just as he'd imagined. The bullseye of the Crank Palace from above, along its outer edge, a ring of dilapidated shops, offices, and restaurants faced inward, most of them looking like they hadn't run a respectable business in years. Where once windows and doors had resided, there were now only empty spots of darkness or hastily nailed up boards. The glass had been taken long ago. Not many eligible signs remained either, though one said, in clear black letters against a white background, "Howard's Hoagies, the best Sammies in the valley." Hundreds of people jammed the paved central area, every last one of them either busy with activity or busy making a beeline for some undisclosed location for some undisclosed purpose. There was lots of yelling, lots of laughing, lots of talking, lots of arguing. In no surprise whatsoever, Newt saw at least 7 brawls from where he stood at the entrance. These were often broken up by plain-clothed people holding full-sized launchers, people who appeared healthier and stronger than those around them, calmer, a more rational bearing. Or maybe it was just because they were the ones holding weapons. Newt assumed these were the munis, those immune from the flare, that worked here either for money or out of the goodness of their precious little hearts. Keisha had mentioned them in their very first conversation, but he'd never followed up on it because they'd spent the next hour running for their lives from the crank sweeps. It was weird that there were other people like Tommy, Minho, Teresa, and the rest, who for some reason stayed stable and sane despite the viral intrusion. Immune. It shouldn't be weird. Of course there were others out there, statistically speaking. Maybe it just rubbed him the wrong way because he was still distraught that he hadn't been the same as his friends. He had a sudden itch to write in his journal, to share some of these feelings. Tonight. Pausing to take another deep breath, he marveled at how much and how quickly he was changing. He felt like an old, sentimental geezer in moments like this. Movement, A blur that approached in his peripheral vision from the right snapped him out of it. A woman ran up to him, a middle-aged, short-haired lady with a wrinkly face and bright blue eyes. She swatted him on the upper arm and kept running, didn't say a word to him. Such things didn't seem to faze anyone else in the huge clearing.
"Welcome to Crank Palace," he thought. "Welcome to the Central Zone. Welcome to your future."
Chapter 9. Ignoring his suddenly intense desire to run, to go back to Keisha and Dante, to huddle up in a tiny cabin far away from this madhouse, Newt forced himself to walk the perimeter. Tried to hide his limp as much as possible. He liked to think he was brave, but he felt the fear of so much unpredictability swirling all around him like the waters of a raging ocean, sharp rocks hidden beneath the dark, white-capped surface. The former businesses he walked past had a variety of functions, a few only needing a quick glance to know he should just move right along. Drug dens and the like. A lot of the others had become informal eateries, usually a couple of those launcher-bearing guards keeping watch on the inside to make sure things didn't get out of hand. It was an unstable trifecta, indeed. Cranks, food, hunger. Newt stepped into the next foodie place he came across because it was mostly empty on the inside. A man stood behind a grill, like something you'd find at a real neighborhood cookout, Newt supposed, seemingly not caring that only about half the smoke from the meat he cooked escaped through the open windows in the front. The rest hovered like a mini weather system along the ceiling of the establishment. Newt coughed a couple of times, then asked a guard standing nearby how much it cost to eat there. The man was either chewing on some of the goods himself or smacking on gum. He had a launcher strung over his shoulder and looked as bored out of his mind as one can be.
"Huh?"
he asked, trying to make that single word sound as rude as possible.
"I just got here," Newt responded,
smart enough to avoid any kind of arrogant display.
"How does money work around here? How can I earn some to buy food?"
The man swallowed. Newt could actually hear the gulp of it.
"Officially? There ain't no money. This place is welfare, man. Didn't you get the post in your hotel room?"
He laughed at that, but stopped when Newt didn't join in.
"Old Leroy here will give you a bite or two. He's one of the best around. Cooks like his grandmammy taught him, no doubt. But sniff around the palace a bit and you'll, how do I want to say it? You know, improve your circumstances. Yeah, there you go. There ain't no money, but you can definitely be poor. Know what I mean, big guy?"
Newt just shook his head and said,
"No." "Well, ain't you a lot of fun? Get some food before I decide to kick your ratty blonde-haired ass out of here. Get on now. I ain't in the mood to talk to no cranks anyhow."
Newt understood survival. He understood it more than most. He happily accepted a plate of food and chowed it down, even though he'd eaten just an hour or two earlier. It was beef again. Chicken again. Apparently the Crank Palace had no idea what a fruit or vegetable was. As Newt took his last couple of bites and wiped his mouth with a scrawny, half-wet napkin, he had an amusing but very apt question pop into his mind. Where in the hell were they getting all these cows and chickens? Something had switched in his mind and he was ready to leave. He hated the sinking feeling of uncertainty that consumed him. Could he go back to that shack and live unhappily ever after with Keisha, Dante, Terry, and a crazy woman with burns all over her hands and knees? Really, what was he going to do here? What was the plan? He'd staved it off for a while, but those hated fingers of despair were clutching at his heart. But in the immediate future of the next 30 minutes, an hour, the rest of the day, he just wanted to be with familiar people again, no matter how slight the familiar part of the equation might be. Walking quickly now, he hurried to finish his circular sojourn around the central zone. A few more eateries, a gym for boxers, an idea that shone supreme if they could just get the brawlers off the paved clearing and into the makeshift ring they'd set up inside. A market with crafts and odds and ends. A library, a place so crammed with books and ratty but cushioned chairs that it seemed the very definition of cozy. Newt swore to come back there soon. Keisha would love it. He had no doubt. Another location was packed wall to wall with bodies. At first, Newt recoiled, thinking it a morgue or mortuary, but he soon saw the bodies moving. They were clothed in odd apparel, writhing on the floor to bizarre music. Dance club? A cult? He hightailed it out of there. And then there was the bowling alley. He couldn't believe it. Earlier he'd made a joke in his mind about such a thing being in the Crank Palace, but there it was, although there hadn't been a whole lot of bowling going on for a very long time. A joke, after all. Newt had no memory whatsoever of holding a bowling ball, much less playing the game, and yet he understood what it was in concept, had images in his mind of the activity in full swing. But here, the wooden lanes used for such play had been torn up, stacks of them scattered toward the far sides, where people manned actual fires in the niches where bowling pins once stood. They'd probably burned those too. Sleeping bags, blankets, people lay everywhere. Maybe it was that long line of makeshift fireplaces, but the gloomy place had a cozy warmth similar to the library that made him want to come back. And no one was fighting, at least at the moment. Newt left through the open door. Based on the rusted, dangling hinges, the actual door had been tossed in some distant past, and headed toward the big arch, the exit. Along the way, he was jostled, bumped, hugged, pushed, fell down twice, was helped up once. He caught sight of immunes glaring at him, their launchers held rigid in their arms, whispering to other munis, sharing secrets. He couldn't understand what value Wicked saw in making sure that people knew who he was, what he'd been through, and that he'd arrived at the hottest club in town for cranks. He had to get out of that place. He needed sleep. Finally, he made it to the arch, went under the bright-colored letters of its sign, half running and fully relieved to be on the relative quiet of the path that led to the outer rings of the palace. He slowed himself to a brisk walk, realized he was completely covered in sweat, and that his face felt like it had been roasted by the sun for hours. Yes, he definitely needed sleep. Maybe a solid 24 hours of it. He stopped. Three raggedy-looking cranks stood in his way, each one holding a steel pipe, as if they'd just robbed the same plumbing store for makeshift weapons. Newt thought he must really be losing his mind because the sight of them made him laugh. It was stupid. Comical, like something from a 10-year-old's vision of the baddest people on Earth. One of the cranks even had a bandana tied around his head and affected an evil grin that made him look like he had something wrong with his lips. "I'm not in the mood," Newt said. He knew with absolute certainty that he could pass a lie detector test right there on the spot, declaring to the officiator that he'd be perfectly okay with these idiots putting him out of his misery. But fate decided not to call his bluff, at least not yet. One of the thugs, a man with long, greasy black hair and muscles bulging out of the rips in his shirt, walked up to Newt and stopped about 3 feet in front of him. Every instinct and internal alarm told Newt to run like hell, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. The ever-expanding, crazy part of his brain urged him to lash out and punch the guy in the nose, get the brawl started, and hope for the best. Instead, he waited.
"We know who you are," the man said finally.
For such a tough-looking fellow, he sure had a soft voice. The word velvety came to Newt's mind, and he had an absurd urge to laugh.
"Out with it, then," Newt muttered. "Who am I?"
Surprisingly, the man took on a somewhat humbled air.
"We know the things they did to you, to the ones taken. We know the utter shite you've been through, at no choice of your own, trying to find a cure for the likes of us. We're here to tell you that it's appreciated, that people like us honor you."
Newt swallowed, rendered speechless. This man didn't appear to have any intent of beating the tar out of him, after all. That, or this was all a ruse to, what, catch him off guard? Nonsense. These blokes could take him down without breaking a sweat.
"Sorry," the man said. "A tad on the cheesy side. We're just..."
He straightened his back, lifted his chin a little.
"Hell, man. We just wanted you to know that a lot of us are on your side. No one will mess with you. Not until they get through us first, anyway." "I don't know what else to say. I kind of feel like an ass."
Newt nodded, a little thrown off balance, but honestly thrilled at the prospect that he might have his own personal security detail.
"Thank you," he replied,
worried anything more elaborate might shatter the whole deal. The man nodded back, then looked around awkwardly, as if he hadn't thought this far ahead when he'd imagined the scenario. He stepped to the side of the path, gestured for his two partners to do the same. They did.
"My name is Jonesy," he said. "Well, that's what they call me anyway. Just give a holler if you need us for anything. We'll always be right around the bend."
"Okay,"
Newt replied, knowing he could never fully trust a few cranks holding pipes. But he didn't want them as enemies either. That was for sure.
"Thanks again. Seriously, thanks."
Neither the man nor his friends responded, so Newt set off for the outskirts of the palace again, feeling their eyes on his back as he walked.
"We'll always be right around the bend,"
the stranger known as Jonesy had said. Maybe that was the best news yet for Newt since arriving at the Crank Palace. Or maybe it was the worst. One of those two, for certain. He walked a little faster. Chapter 10. No one else bothered him or talked to him as he made his way back to the pathetic little cabin in which they'd slept the night before. He barely saw anyone at all, even in the peripherals. When he swung by the shack of Terry and Maria, they were sitting in ragged chairs just outside the front door. Maria had been bandaged on her arms and legs with something that looked like a bedsheet torn into strips. Terry gave Newt a half-hearted wave, but then stared at the ground. Maria had her eyes closed. The message was clear. "You're not invited." When Newt finally reached his own little hut, he saw Dante, composed, quiet, playing with a rock, sitting by himself on the grass patchy dirt, the door closed behind him. A terrifying thrill of panic leaped in Newt's nerves, knowing for certain that Keisha would never leave the kid alone like this. Newt sprinted for the door, ripped it open, saw with a sinking heart that it was empty. Even his backpack was gone. His journal. His launcher. Keisha's things. All of it. Gone. He lost his balance, felt like he might faint. Leaning against the edge of the doorframe, he forced himself to breathe. Where in the hell had she gone?
"No, idiot," he told himself. "Someone took her, took your things."
He sucked in a lungful of air, then turned to Dante. Although he'd never heard the boy speak, he asked him the question anyway.
"Dante, do you know where your mom is? Your mom? Where'd she go?"
No answer, but the kid looked up at him with the saddest look of hope in his eyes. Probably just hearing the word mom had stirred something on the inside. Newt tried to shake some reason into his head, felt like the world was literally splitting apart around him, an earthquake, the big one, shaking the whole planet just to make things perfectly apocalyptic. He made a quick run around the hut to see if she lingered somewhere close. Maybe she'd found a better home for them, or was looking for one.
No, idiot,
he chided himself again. He'd never once seen her, even though it had been only a day or so, never seen her let the boy out of her sight. He walked back to Dante, picked him up, hefted him in his arms until it felt comfortable.
Don't worry, mate, he said. We're gonna find your mom.
He allowed himself 5 seconds to consider in which direction he should go. Toward the central zone? Toward the gate that exited the Crank Palace? The latter, he thought. If for no other reason than it was closer, and it'd be a good place to start canvassing his way back through the rings of huts and hovels and tents.
Come on, kid. Let's go.
The anxiety cinching up his insides with each and every step proved to be almost unbearable. The maddening uncertainty of it was enough to make his heart strain for every single beat. He had to know where she was, what had happened, an outcome, any outcome. He almost dropped Dante with the anguish that consumed him. What in the bloody hell was he going to do if he didn't find her? But then, there she was. It was a sight that did a strange thing. In the same moment, he felt an overwhelming relief, even while his hopes for the future sunk to the depths of the earth. Keisha was fine, at least physically. Keisha was alone. She walked along, her back to him, slowly and with a lurch in each step, about 200 yards or so from the gate in the huge wooden wall. She had Newt's backpack strapped to her shoulders, her own pack slung in the crook of her left elbow, and with her right hand she dragged along a canvas bag full of what he didn't know. It had been easy to catch up with her because she moved at a snail's pace, taking a strange little pause to pull on the canvas bag between every 2 steps, as if the stuff in there weighed more than she did.
"Keisha!"
he yelled. She either didn't hear him or pretended not to. He quickened his gait to a run.
"Keisha! Stop!"
She didn't. Newt caught up with her, went past her until he was directly in her path and stood there, facing back, feet planted, holding Dante in front of him like an omen to shame her for the outrageous decision she'd made to leave. She saw them and stopped, although the expression on her face didn't change. She looked exhausted and weary, void of emotion, sweat soaking her hair and skin.
"Keisha,"
Newt said, trying to dampen the sudden anger he felt.
"What on earth?"
She dropped the end of the canvas sack she'd been dragging. Then she let the pack hitched in her elbow slide down her forearm and into the dirt with a puff of dust. Finally, with an air of defeat, she slipped Newt's backpack off each shoulder and let it slump to the ground. Newt heard the clank of his launcher and had the intense hope that his journal was safely inside. She stood there, hunched over a bit, catching her breath.
"I knew he'd be safe with you," she whispered.
The look that then came to her face melted away Newt's anger. A purity of sadness. Her eyes, her mouth, her ears, her cheeks, they all dropped toward the ground as if they'd just remembered the law of gravity.
"What's going on?" Newt asked. "Where are you going? How could you leave Dante?"
The boy was squirming, and Newt finally let him down. He ran to his mom, who overcame her madness long enough to drop to her knees and embrace her only living child in this world. She hugged him fiercely, and he hugged her back. Tears poured from her eyes.
"I'm so sorry," she whispered. "I'm so sorry."
She said it over and over. Newt didn't know what else to do but sit on the ground himself. How was he supposed to approach this incomprehensible situation? What was he supposed to say? Nothing came to mind, so he stayed silent, watched the reunion that never should have happened. She'd left her kid. Could her mind really have slipped so much, so quickly? A minute or two passed. Nothing changed. Keisha finally broke the silence with a sentence so unexpected and void of context that she had to say it twice.
I have a cell phone.
Huh?
I have a cell phone.
Chapter 11. Newt had never had a cell phone. Like many things in his weird, swiped mind, he knew what it was, of course, that it had been extremely common in the world before the apocalypse. But it had become almost a thing of the past, something forcefully replaced by physical landline or radio communications in a broken world. Keisha seemed to think her answer sufficient to explain why she'd left her kid behind, stolen Newt's things, and headed for the exit.
Okay,
Newt said, leaning forward on his elbows, their bony tips pressed into his folded legs beneath him.
You have a cell phone. So,
what?
Does that mean you work for Wicked? You're some kind of evil agent for some evil doctor that's come to study me? One of the infamous gladers? Is that it?
The questions were enough to snap Keisha back to reality a little.
Huh? What in the world are you talking about?
Why do you have a cell phone? Newt asked with swelling impatience. Keisha shrugged.
My husband stole it.
A month or so before he... Never mind. I swore I'd never tell you that story, didn't I?
Not really. You just made me promise never to ask about it. I haven't.
Right.
She looked at him for a long time. Dante did as well, something like a smirk on his face, which made Newt feel the slightest bit better.
Anyway, the point is that I have a cell phone.
Newt threw his hands up in frustration.
Why is that the point, Keisha?
Because it works. I only turn it on once a day to save the battery, then turn it right back off again. Times have been few and far between when I've been able to charge the damn thing.
Newt had something build in his chest, a physical lump of awareness, making it hard to get a full breath.
Someone called you? Sent you a message?
Keisha nodded with overt exaggeration.
Yes, someone did, Newt. Someone most certainly did.
When she didn't add anything to that, he threw his hands up again.
Who?
Keisha sighed, bent down to kiss Dante on the head. When she looked back up at Newt, it seemed to him like she was trying to make an important decision in her mind. He tried to remember that the mind in which she was working so hard might not be firing on all cylinders. Something his dad used to say. Images began flashing through Newt's mind, blurry glimpses of people. His dad? His mum? His sister? He squeezed his eyes shut and shook his head violently. He couldn't do this right now. He didn't even know if they were sane thoughts. He didn't want to go mad yet.
You okay?
Keisha asked. It could almost be funny. Now she was worried about him. Crazy worrying about crazy.
Yeah, he said quietly. Yeah.
You need to take care of Dante for me.
Newt glared.
Take care of him? I'd ask if you'd gone insane, but I already know the answer.
I knew you wouldn't agree to it if I just asked like this. That's why I fed him and left him, knowing you'd be back soon. If not you, then Terry and Maria. I also scrounged up a lot of food and left a bag of it buried right behind the cabin. You probably didn't see my note to you. That's plain as day.
Nope,
Newt replied, his voice listless.
Not nary a note to be seen.
He nodded at the canvas bag she'd been dragging.
Is that food too?
Keisha nodded.
Can you please just tell me what's going on? I can't see any explanation of you leaving him behind that could possibly make sense, not to mention why you'd steal my stuff.
Keisha stared at him, chewing on that for a few seconds.
Fair enough. Let's go over to those trees so that we don't have nosy munis with launchers come by asking questions dumber than yours.
Newt agreed, helping her carry all the stuff to a shady spot, mostly hidden from the path.
If you think my questions are dumb, he said, throwing all the snark he could into the words, then that proves you've lost it. You left your own kid, Keisha. I think I have a right to ask you any stupid question I want. I know, I was just kidding. Really. I can't help being a smartass, even when the world's gone to pot. I'm sorry.
Newt set their things against a thick tree, then plopped to the ground, leaning against the clunky backpacks. Keisha sat nearby, Dante in her lap. The day was warm and bright, offset by a breeze that cooled any sweat popping through Newt's skin.
I left you some clothes and your journal, Keisha said. It's all in the bag that I buried.
Newt shook his head.
That's great, but it doesn't quite make up for leaving Dante behind. It makes it worse, actually. Shows that you were thinking straight enough to worry about me, but not Dante? I mean, I don't even know what to say. Fine, I get it, Newt. I'm horrible. Can I tell you my story now? Yes, Keisha. Please tell me your story. I'm all ears.
She eyed him at that, but let it go. She hardly had room to complain at his sarcasm.
Listen. I came up here with Dr.